Wrestling Daft presents The Daft Sheet. Hello and welcome to The Daft Sheet, the collision to Wrestling Daft's Dynamite, the smackdown to the main show's Raw, the five-star wrestling to Rab and Grado and John's World of Sport. You know what? You know what Billy Gaddy calls us? He calls us the Scottish Note Goat. That's because the Daft Sheet is the one true, genuine article in a podcast business of illegal tender. And this week's empty iron brew bottles that you take back for all the 20p's are Stephen the Roche, Stain Cold, Lewis McNaughton. And they're looking to fill the Daft Sheet with all the money moments of the past week in wrestling. Lads, how are yous this week? How's it going?
I'm brand new, mate. Bit gutted that the weather's turned heel, but can't complain about them.
It's been a bit pishy weather the last couple of days. What about yourself, Lewis? How's things with you?
Good, mate. Definitely feeling better than Brian Danielson's forearm right now. But barely getting ready for my flight to London for Money in the Bank. So just all roads lead to there just now.
Great. When you're setting off, you're going down for the full weekend or just for the show?
Aye, going off. We're seeing SmackDown the day before, so we're setting off from Edinburgh at about 6:20 a.m. on the Friday morning. So having to leave my gaff at about 2:00. So one of those overnight holiday sort of experiences that.
There's nothing worse. I had that in going to Berlin the other week there for the stag that I mentioned the other week. I think my flight was at 10:07 in the morning from Dublin. So I had to leave my house just north of Belfast at 2:00 in the morning to get to Belfast for 3:00 to get the bus down to Dublin for 5:00 to get my flight. And then on the way back, it was ridiculous times as well. So I do not envy you that, but I do envy the fact that you are going to the O2. Are you doing any of the sort of the pre-show stuff around the event or?
Sorry, it's not going to be the WrestleMania that we're going to get this year anyway. So hopefully, I was looking at some shows around it, and I think, I don't know whether it's Progress, people like that are doing shows. And Dr. Undertaker's got his, he's got a show before that as well, but basically extortionate for that is bad enough for the money.
I saw that was a £260 a ticket or something mental.
Hear about that, no matter who it is. But I think we're just going to go and, to be fair, if we went round London for a day drinking, it would be about the same price as that. So,
I suppose.
My pals wanted to see a few of the sites. So, we'll see the crack. Probably go to Madame Tussauds Pished or something and see how that turns out.
Good stuff, man. Well, you know what? We could give you an assignment. You could be a roving reporter for Money in the Bank next week. So you could send us like a voice note, some of the highs and lows of what's going. We can fire that into the middle of the podcast next week if you were up for doing that.
Be the
Daft Sheet's man on the ground. Cool. Right, well, what we'll do is we'll get smashing right into this week's Daft Sheet. So if you've not listened before, basically Steve and Lewis are on here trying to pitch the best wrestling stories of the week to me in order for us to fill the Daft Sheet. They're looking to fill the front page, the back page, page 3, and the telly pages. And if we've got time, we will look to do the Mystic Mega Powers, I think we'll call it this week. We'll do the horoscopes. We'll bring them back from the other week there as well and see what the stars are, or how the stars are aligning for the superstars of world wrestling. Now, what we'll do is we'll go to the front page first, which is the biggest news story of the week. And I will see, who did I have penciled in for this? Lewis, I'll come to you first. What has been the biggest wrestling story of the week for you?
I'd say it's probably the debate on whether Forbidden Door was potentially top 5, if not the best pay-per-view ever. To me, it's probably not up there. However, there are parts of it that would make me think that people would put it up there. Obviously, the matches were good. The stories during it advanced. Obviously had the matches such as Osprey, Omega, you had obviously Okada and Danielson. Those are five-star matches that would put any pay-per-view up there, but to me, shows like obviously WrestleMania 17, which everyone bangs on about, even though it was 3 at the time, I obviously watched it over time. And
Jesus, fuck, you've made me feel so old.
Sorry, mate. Sorry. yeah, those are the ones that stick out to me and ones I'd see myself going back to. I don't know, random ones throughout, like the six-man Hell in a Cell, things like that are the ones that resonate with me. And there are ones that there are parts of this show that make me think that I definitely want to go watch it back. So I'd probably say, in my mind, it's up there, but definitely not one of the best pay-per-views ever. But I'd say that story of the debate between it has been all over my Twitter feed, so I'd pick that for this week.
I think... sorry, but I'll just come in here, Chris. One of the greatest ever's... it kind of... I would make maybe my top 20. Don't know if it would make my top 5. Like my top 5 would be TakeOver New Orleans, Royal Rumble 2000. That was my favourite from back in the day. Dominion 2018. Survivor Series 2002. And probably Mania 21. They've always... I would kind of put them as my top 5.
Yeah, that's still WrestleMania 30 and 31 in for me, and probably 2001 Royal Rumble. I'd say it's one of the best ones.
I think, do you actually, to get off track here, I would say my most unpopular wrestling opinion is, you know, we've all got that really unpopular wrestling opinion. Aye. Here's mine. WrestleMania X7 is not the best ever WrestleMania.
Ooh, it's controversial.
Yeah. It's I would say it's 4th. My favourite one ever was 21. Then after that, I would put 31, probably also go 5, and also probably 23.
What was 30 on your list?
30 gets to about, I'd say about 6 or 7.
So a lot of shows to kind of like fathom it as being the best, and obviously it's quite a subjective thing picking that. But I mean, in terms of the matches that were on Forbidden Door at the weekend, you know, there were some dream matchups. Obviously, Osprey Omega 2, phenomenal. Okada Danielson. The fact is that, you know, Danielson wrestled a good chunk of that match with a broken arm as well, having saved himself from injury for the last few months to be ready for that match. You know, it's testament to how hard he must have went in that to make that match as good as it was. Again, you had all the emotional drama and intensity of the BCC versus the Elite. You had Punk against Kojima as well. You know, there's so many good matches. But again,
Punk against Kojima was a banger. That was way better than I thought it was ever going to be.
Yep. I've not managed to watch any of the matches all the way through. I've just been skimming the YouTube highlights and things that I've seen. But all the high spots that have been featured in the clips that I've seen have been very, very high in terms of the action, the drama, the danger of that. The final 2 minutes of the Osprey Omega match, just absolute, you know, the two of them absolutely blasting each other, and the Tiger Driver on the basically.
Oh, can we wait till I talk about that later, please?
No worries. No, we'll keep a powder dry in that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does seem to be up there. I mean, I have, again, you know, peeling a bit behind the curtain on here, I get a lot of my sort of wrestling knowledge from listening to other podcasts, and two guys that I hold in quite high esteem when it comes, especially when it comes to AEW, are Hamflet and Sidgwick on What Culture. And I know they're not to everybody's tastes and whatnot, but from what they were saying, you know, it's up there. It's not, they don't think it's the greatest pay-per-view of all time, but it's pretty damn close in terms of the high points of the main matches. And you know, I think, you know, they were a bit down on the Sting v Jericho 6-man match. Obviously the Jack Perry thing didn't really get good until the turn, because you never really thought that he was going to win the IWGP belt there. So it had its lows, and but it had very high highs, I think, as the most part. I mean, do you think that the fact that it was kind of a lot of fresh matches in terms of, you know, bringing the Japanese guys in, do you think that that is something that added to the specialness of it, when, which is why people are holding it in such high esteem?
I'd say myself, there's a sort of bittersweet with that, because say me watching a match such as like the one you said for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, or even the one for the AEW Championship, even though they're fresh matches, you looked at it and went, for what reason would MJF lose this belt? There's a chance that he's going to lose that belt.
This is the reason that I think holds it back for being one of the old-timers. As great as it was, and look, it does have you want from a pay-per-view, banging matches, red-hot crowd, a couple of shock storyline advancements, etc. But this is the problem with these big crossover events. No titles are going to change that, and there was no way Sanada was dropping the IWGP title to effectively an AEW mid-carder. There was no way MJF was dropping his title to a guy who's nearly 50, who's, you know, pretty much in his last year or two as a main eventer. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, it was a bit predictable. But look, great show. It'll be remembered for Omega Osprey 2 alone. I mean, that's where its legacy will lie. And I guess Danielson Okada, it was a watershed moment there. Probably Japan's best wrestler of the past 10, 15 years versus America's best wrestler of the past 10, 15 years.
I suppose, Lewis, the one question to ask coming out of Forbidden Door 2023, do you ever think that the Forbidden Door will be opened that wee bit wider to incorporate WWE or maybe, you know, any other major wrestling promotions other than New Japan?
I could definitely see, obviously, Impact coming back in as soon as they can for AEW, and I can see other promotions, obviously your Mexican ones. Basically, everyone's done it with AEW except WWE. I can see more chance of potential outsiders, as in people like Finn, not anymore, but people who have done it before in New Japan, things like that.
Yeah.
Or people coming to the end of their career, like maybe putting Chris Jericho against someone who is on the out of WWE, someone like that, that would probably break it in. But I don't think that the paths would cross between someone like Omega and Reigns unless something really went completely off course and dramatically changed, because neither of the companies really need that to happen. I think New Japan like just forming good relations with people, whereas Vince, whoever's in control of WWE now, didn't really care about these dream matches as much. They're for the money. They want to get more eyes on the product, and I feel as though doing a crossover thing that AEW wouldn't necessarily do that. So maybe AEW would be more inclined to do that with WWE, but I feel as though the other way it wouldn't happen.
Cool. Well, that's a strong opening gambit from you there for the front page. Steve, what do you think is a bigger or better news story than everything surrounding Forbidden Door this week?
Probably not bigger or better. It's actually Forbidden Door related, and it's Jungle Boy's shock heel turn.
Mm-hmm. Is it much of a shock?
Probably not. Now you think about it, it's a shock in terms of the timing. I would have thought they would have waited it wait to do it further down the line at Dynamite, or maybe a bit closer to All Out to do it. But they pulled the trigger on it very, very quick. I think the shock of it comes from a lot of people on the Discord that we're on were expecting it to be Hook that does it. Because the Jungle Boy, like he's probably one of the last guys that you would think would do a heel turn. He's white meat face. White meat baby face as it gets, and he's got the whole, you know, he's a cute looking wee guy that lasses. Obviously, he'd be like the last guy you would expect. But I think it was coming. I think it's something that spun off from the Four Pillars feud. And I remember talking to you about it the first time I was on here with you, Chris. As good as the Four Pillars feud was, I think it exposed Jungle Boy a lot. We gradually noticed the crowd turning against him, and it got worse and worse each week, to the point where on the Rampage before Forbidden Door, he was pretty much getting booed. He was against was that guy Dookie?
Yes.
From LSG, and he was getting he was getting the full crowd behind him to, wanting to see Jungle Boy get beaten. So I think it wasn't getting planned, but I think after on the reception of that match, I think Tony Khan said, "We need to pull the trigger on your heel turn now," mm-hmm. because it's only going to get worse. And I'm really, really interested in it. It's like because where's this going to go? And like, it's going to be really interesting to see him as a heel. I think he may even change his whole appearance. I think he'll get a haircut. I think he'll probably need to change his moveset a wee bit as well. I also think, could they put him back with Christian and Luchasaurus? I mean, Christian is like one of the most hated heels in the company right now. Could you maybe reattach them? Maybe they see them with Luchasaurus, could go after the six-man titles?
I think it's maybe a bit too early to put him back with Christian and Luchasaurus, but I think, in terms of the aesthetic of him, I think, that needs an overhaul if he's going to be bought as a heel. Mm-hmm. I reckon they'll drop Jungle Boy. They'll drop Jungle Boy is his name. It'll just be Jack Perry.
Cole Tarzan, his entrance, that's gone now.
Aye.
Which I'm kind of glad of, because I know it was a big crowd warmer, but it was getting a bit annoying in my regard, and I think I'm noticing AEW is starting to claw back in that. Did you also notice Moxley's not using Wild Thing anymore?
Is he not? No.
No, his entrance was at the whole BCC, but it wasn't Wild Thing. It was a more generic thing they were using.
Ah, right.
Because they're heels now, so they've got to stop getting
those reactions.
Aye, so they've got to move from that. Another theory that I've got, I'm probably overthinking it, but we know that Guevara is going to... he's turning babyface. He's going to leave JS soon. Could Jungle Boy take his place?
Could, because I mean, Anna Jay's already there. So.
Is his girlfriend, aye?
I'm thinking, obviously, Woody, obviously with his dad, being a big TV star and all this sort of stuff,
aye.
Is there a good chance that he goes down that route of being like Hollywood, Jack Perry, that sort of
could happen, yeah. he pretty much grew up in Beverly Hills, so that's a possibility as well.
No, there's a lot they can do with him, and because he is so young, you could see him doing the big show flip flop for the number of years. There's so much they can do with him, and if you think, if he does go down the heel route, which eventually leads to a face turn, the pop for them bringing back Baltimore, bringing back the Tarzan look, I suppose would be absolutely off the chain as well. But it'd be good to see that kind of ruthless side to him. I mean, we spoke a couple of podcasts ago about, how Orange Cassidy has sometimes been, been a bit cheaty to get his wins and things like that. If we see that kind of sneakiness come in with Jack Perry, it'll maybe endear them a wee bit more to the crowd. Because I think, it's kind of like when you see a good-looking comedian. You can't take a good-looking comedian seriously because, they've obviously had too much go well in their life because of their good looks, that they can't be funny. And I think with Jack Perry, because he's such a handsome lad, it's hard to kind of relate to him, I suppose. I think that's maybe part of the problem the fans have had with him, because he does look too polished. We know that he's in a bit of a privileged background compared to somebody like, Darby Allin or Wardlow, guys like that in the same kind of spot.
I think as well, he's not terrible on the mic, but he does, I think, try too hard with his deliveries on of his lines sometimes, and I think that's made a lot of fans think, I can't get behind this guy.
Quite similar to Ricochet, someone like
a wee bit, he's not boring or anything. It's just like he's tried to. I remember one promo during the Christian feud where he tried to imply that Christian had a small dick or something, and I thought, you're just being a wee boy there. It's just wee boy humour. I can't get behind that. Aye.
Cool. Well, I mean, that is any other week I would say that would be a strong contender, Steve, but I think there's no denying that Forbidden Door has been the biggest story of the week. So, Lewis, you're getting the front page with the headline, Forbidden Door Cannot Be Knocked. So, well done on getting that there.
I thought my headline would have been Jungle Hook Gets the Hook.
Well, I had Jungle Jack's Hook Lines a Stinker.
That's why you're there, though.
That's why I'm there, though. But we're going to go with Lewis on that one.
Well done, Lewis.
So what we'll do now is, as always, we'll move from the front page to the back page with the best in-ring action of the week. And I'll come to you first on that one, Steve. What would you have as your pick of match of the week?
How can it not be in Lewis? I apologise, because I think you're probably already picked as well. It's a Mega Osprey. How can it not be?
We'll just declare it now. Like this, like the match of the week has got to be a Mega Osprey. So you guys take it away. You can chat about that for the next wee while.
It was effectively, it was actually like three matches in one almost, and it's so much happened in it. It's almost impossible where to begin. It had a nice kind of steady setup for the kind of first minute. Then they immediately kicked it into high gear, and there was just so many memorable spots. Starting from like when Osprey took Omega outside and just started beating his fucking head off the banner on the commentator's table, and that was echoing back to Wrestle Kingdom when Omega did it him on the table, and then Osprey licking the blood off his bicep and getting the "You sick fuck" chant off the kids, off the crowd, and then he went out to the kids that they were calling, like shouting at him, "You suck," and then he took the Canadian flag, you know, wiped his arse with and all that. Like call back to when Sean did that in Montreal against Brett, and then Omega, you know, getting the flag off him, taking it back out to those kids, which really popped them, and that was a really nice touch as well. Then there was probably the steel steps. I mean, Jesus Christ. Was that a brainbuster or was that a pile driver? I can't remember. The bit on the steel steps.
It was definitely somebody getting dropped horrifically on them.
it was a sideways one. It wasn't like how it's meant to be set. It was sideways. They were about bloody 7 feet in the air doing it as well. But of course, the memorable one, Chris, you've already said it. Jesus Christ, that Tiger Driver. Oh my God, man, I shat myself. I thought Omega's neck was gone.
I know. It was horrific looking. I mean, my shits shat themselves watching it. It was like, again, for, you know, with my limited experience in the ring, you know, seeing anybody get dropped on their head or their neck is always horrific, whether it's in training, mm-hmm. whether it's in matches, that kind of thing. And it just shows you at the highest level the level that those guys are operating on to pull off that spot and not be dead after it is just phenomenal, you know, neck training, shoulder training, whatever, just unreal dedication to the bit to be able to pull that maneuver off and neither of them being crippled for the rest of their life.
Aye, and so late in the match as well, when they're both drenched in sweat and blood, where you know, anything can happen. Well, they're probably by then knackered as well, mm-hmm. and yet to still pull it off is just insane. There's maybe one minor wee teeny criticism is I don't like how Callis gets sent back only for him to come back out, sneakily give Osprey the screwdriver. Maybe I've just kept him in the back in the first place, then bring him out halfway through the match. I thought that was a bit pointless. But other than that, it's an all-timer. It's a classic. And I think even better than the Tokyo Dome match. I think the red-hot Toronto crowd added to it. I'm not knocking Japanese crowds. They're just different. I think in front of a red-hot, largely indie wrestling-loving crowd. I think that really added to it.
What about yourself, Lewis? What were your sort of thoughts on the 40-minute epic?
Yeah, in terms of the difference between the Japanese crowds and that, it's more of a collapse they get for things. I think a pop ad, anything, doesn't it? See if like a pop ad's massive amount. See if Edge came out of the Royal Rumble in 2021, and everyone clapped.
Aye,
you'd go all right for them second and then go all right, Edge. But the pop just adds to the match a million times, and when it's as good, I think being in front of an American crowd, especially ones or a Canadian crowd, Bizarro World, as WWE commentators would like to put it. It always adds to the show. And in terms of the match, yeah, I think it had a strong sort of attitude or feel to it at a point, which would resonate with fans who are more in it for the story. And then it twisted 10 seconds later straight into a New Japan sort of indie match, which resonates with the next set of fans.
That's what I mean, like with the three matches in one, it was like a merging of like all the cultures of wrestling almost into one. And like even like when Omega got the foot break, like have you ever seen a foot break pin get a pop like that? Who'd ever thought that would happen? I think the only one I can remember recall was WrestleMania when Owens and Jericho, when Owens got the break with the finger eye. That's the kind of time I've seen a pop like that happen to a rope break.
Neville and Seth Rollins as well is the only other one I can think of.
Aye.
Which was sort of out of nowhere as well. Anything else about that? You've covered it pretty well there.
Do you think that we'll see the trilogy ended at All In?
I think that's the only reason that Ospreay's won. I think Tony Khan, because Omega's such a massive star in AEW and America as well, that it's going to be very hard to make him lose to someone that a massive set of fans, the casual fan, probably wouldn't know who Will Ospreay is, or maybe even have the vaguest idea.
Yeah, getting in front of 70,000 and sky's the limit. But also, here's another cool thing, it would be all three matches for the United States title and none of them would be in America because it'd be Japan, Canada and England.
Yep, and not competed for by Americans either.
Aye, that's true. Holy shit.
But again, I don't know, I'm in a bit of a bubble over here in Belfast. I don't know if it's any different for you guys in Scotland. In general, do you think British wrestling fans see Ospreay as being a British bulldog for this generation? Someone British that they can hang
I think more of a dynamite kid. Much more a dynamite kid.
Yeah, he's left.
I think Drew's more closer to Davey Boy. Mm-hmm.
I think he's done his piece. He's obviously done his piece in the UK, but he's gone quite early doors and made more of a name in Japan, which basically would have them thinking he's one of their own, even though he's not born there, grew up there, anything like that. I would see him more as a sort of Japanese wrestler as opposed to sort of the traditional sort of grapple based UK wrestlers that you think of when you think of the UK.
Zack Sabre Jr. is much more your traditional UK guy.
That's what I was going to say. Obviously, Zack Sabre Jr. was involved in the International Championship four-way match. Do you think there's room for him on the All-In card as well off the back of Forbidden Door? Do you think he's another one?
I'm not sure they would give him something. What it would be, I don't know. Would it be against Orange Cassidy? I really want that to be Pac. I remember mentioning that to you before. I want Pac to get the rematch against him. Maybe I could see them doing a big battle royal thing because like everybody's going to be wanting to be on this card. Like every AEW guy, but I think there'll be some New Japan guys, not like you know on the WhatsApp chat to Tony Khan going, can I get a spot? So I think they might do a battle royal. The only thing I'm worried that maybe Ospreay and Sabre Jr. wouldn't be on it is because I think the G1 is just finishing and they'll probably be knackered, and G1 matches are always high intense, bruising affairs. So they might be a wee bit beaten up and New Japan might say to them, no, look, you've just been off the, the G1, yous are carrying injuries. We do not want yous, risking it. If they say if you're going to be on it, we want yous to be in multi-man matches where it's a bit safer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think
it's a good way of protecting them, especially if they are coming off the back of, you know, not just the intensity of the G1, but all the travelling and stuff that's involved with that as well, to and from the UK as well. But I mean, that's chat for, you know, August time whenever All In is happening. But there's no denying that the back page this week of the Daft Sheet is going to be dominated by Ospreay and Omega. And the headline I've got for that is Ospreay, Omega, oh my God. So we'll go with that. Now, the centrefold this week is a bit of a special one. Now, the joy of being the editor of an aggregated wrestling news show is that you just get to talk in hyperbole and punt everybody else's work. There's not a lot that you need to do yourself. And it means also means that there is absolutely no issue whatsoever with me revealing to you, the Daft Sheet listeners, that this week's centrefold interview is with none other than the owner, funder, and booker of All Elite Wrestling himself, Tony Khan. Roll the tape. This week's Centrefold is a listen back at the best bits of Tony Khan's pre-Forbidden Door press conference and reviewing how his words played out on the show. The first clip here is of Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful Select asking Tony Khan about putting CM Punk up against Kojima and why he wanted that match so badly.
Hey, Tony, you've booked CM Punk against Kojima, which is very clearly a match that CM Punk has wanted for a long time. He's even referenced Kojima in interviews like 18 years ago. But there was word that he could be facing Kenta, and maybe there were some issues there. Is there anything you can speak on in regards to that? Because, I mean, you all had to make a lot of changes to last year, and that seems like could have been the case this year as well.
Well, this is a really strong card for Sunday's event. I'm incredibly excited about it, and I think this is a great hard-hitting match, and this is the match I want to see, and it's worked out perfectly that Sunday's card is, in my opinion, the most stars we've ever had on any pay-per-view we've ever done. It is such a star-studded show, and I thought it was very fitting that one of the most decorated champions in the history of Japan, Satoshi Kojima, who has been the globally the GHC champion, the global honored crown winner, the IWGP heavyweight champion, the triple crown champion, and to have one of the most decorated heavyweights ever in Japan to come here and wrestle one of the most decorated heavyweights ever in America, CM Punk, it's a huge matchup, and I think it's very fitting that it's in this great Owen Hart tournament field where we have so many great matchups lined up. And I thought it was a great match to kick off the tournament. And I'm really excited about it. And I think Kojima for us is an amazing get and somebody I was really excited to have in. He was involved in the biggest pay-per-view we ever had, All Out 2021, which is the most successful non-WWE wrestling event on pay-per-view since the 90s. And he was a great part of that event. He had a great match with Jon Moxley, and I loved working with Kojima, and he was somebody I really wanted to bring back to this event. So I was very excited about it. And for me personally, Kojima versus Punk is a match I've always wanted to see. I think they both always wanted to wrestle each other. So it's a great, great match for us on the card. And as for anybody else that was allegedly going to be involved or allegedly rumored, I really can't comment to that, but I would say that as it stands, I think this is our best card, our best iteration of a card, and I feel like it's a stacked show with the most star power we've ever presented this Sunday on pay-per-view. Thanks, man.
We can safely say that TK was late to book this one. Punk looked like he was having an absolute ball throughout the match, not just from being in the ring with Kojima, but with the boos from the Toronto crowd, it seemed to bring the beginnings of the impending heel turn to the fore. Repeating the Hogan leg drop from Collision the night before, taunting Kojima with Lariat in the corner in reference to his old ROH promo, was the perfect setup for him later getting elbow dropped square in the balls. Putting a show like this together takes a lot of cooperation from all parties, So when Zach from the Pro Wrestling Torch asked TK about the relationship building needed to pull off this year's Forbidden Door, Tony spoke of the friendships made in getting things to Toronto.
Zach's question from PW Torch is pretty straightforward. How was booking this year's Forbidden Door event different than putting on the inaugural event last year?
Well, that's a really great question. It's been different, and I'll talk to you about how it's been different. First of all, the rapport has been built. I already had a really good connection with Rocky, but Ghetto and I were getting to know each other better last year. Now I feel really close to Ghetto. I think we're friends and have a great relationship. And he was actually in the office with me working last night, and it was great to have him there. And in addition to having a better connection with Ghetto-san and having built a closer relationship and even more trust than we had going into last year, which I think we'd worked together at a distance, you know, sending people back and forth, talking through Rocky, but really built a personal rapport last year that's gotten stronger. And I really like Ghetto and really respect him. And also with on the business side, I've built a stronger connection with Obari-san. And Mr. Obari's done a great job with the New Japan Pro Wrestling office and the business side, building that, as Ghetto has done an amazing job with the booking and creative. And I love working with both of them. I think they're both tremendous. That's been a great part of it. Also, this year, thankfully, knock wood, I'm looking for some wood close to me right now. I might have to get up and walk around. This will have to do. We are not as injury bitten as we were last year at this time. Last year was the most challenging run of injuries that I've ever been through in any sport. This is my 12th year in the National Football League. I've spent 7 years as the director of football at Fulham Football Club, and now we've been going through AEW over 4 years on pay-per-view and done hundreds of events. Never have I seen anything like what happened last year between Double or Nothing and Forbidden Door in terms of huge stars getting injured, and in all different kinds of ways, not just one thing. The injury bug truly bit us hard, and we were able to persevere. We worked really hard. And on the New Japan side, there were challenges too. Obviously, there were some big names there that didn't make the show. I'm very excited to have Ishii participating in the show this weekend, for example, because last year that was a challenge on his end. And of course, for AEW, Bryan Danielson versus Okada, it's a huge dream match, and it's a huge step for AEW that Bryan Danielson's part of the event this year. Last year, CM Punk broke his foot before the event, and he was supposed to have a big match with Tanahashi, and now we have another incredible match nobody thought they were going to get to see, with Punk versus Kojima in an Owen Hart Foundation tournament quarterfinal. And Kenny Omega is one of the biggest stars in AEW and one of the biggest stars ever in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And Kenny Omega is here and having the rematch with Will Ospreay under these incredible circumstances on AEW New Japan Pro Wrestling Forbidden Door. Last year, so many of these great stars were not available, and we still had what was, in the opinion of so many fans all over the world, the greatest wrestling show in the world all year last year. And this year, we haven't had those same issues with injuries. There have been issues, but it's been great putting the show together. And I feel like it's been less challenging in many ways to get to this point. And we had a show that was so great last year, and people had questions going in if we were going to be able to make it as good as it looked on paper and as good as it originally looked on paper. And we were able to do that, despite all those injuries, all those challenges. This year, it feels like the card has come together without that same wave of injuries that affected last year's show. And so I believe we can do an even better show this Sunday at Forbidden Door on pay-per-view. I think the show can be even better than last year's show, which is one of the greatest things I've ever been associated with.
And by all accounts, those relationships have proven fruitful, as Forbidden Door brought AEW's biggest live event gate receipts so far and delivered multiple 4 to 5 star cross-promotion matches as well. Amy from WrestleJoy then asked about the BCC v Elite 5-on-5 match and the intertwining storylines the match was bringing together.
Can you talk about bringing this match together with people from different backgrounds who may not even get along necessarily, but have the same goal in taking down the BCC, or in Kingston's case, just Claudio. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I think it's a very exciting match. There are some really fascinating dynamics at play. Wheeler Yuta brought up a pretty good point today. I guess he's officially out of chaos now, for sure. I think he has been for a while, as we've seen, but that amused me. I think there are a lot of fascinating dynamics at work here. Certainly, with Tomohiro Ishii and his involvement, he's got such an amazing history with some of his own teammates here. Like you said, he's fought against the Elite. He's fought against the Bullet Club at times, and certainly he's fought against Eddie Kingston. And we've also seen Ishii have great matches against the BCC. They had a great six-man match at Dominion, and one of the best matches I've seen in recent years was Ishii versus Moxley in the G1 in 2019. And I think there are so many fascinating dynamics here. Certainly the dynamic between Eddie Kingston and John Moxley is a major emotional hook to this match. And I thought John Moxley and what he said and his behavior and his demeanor added a lot to the show yesterday. And it was a great, great ending to the show, I thought, to have several of the matches intersect and then have Eddie Kingston and John Moxley have that interaction in the ring and build some anticipation for Sunday. Certainly, I think that got people more interested in what's going to happen there. And when Eddie said he had a partner, he meant it. He brought one of the top wrestlers in the world out in Ishii-san. And I think that's going to be an amazing 10-man tag match.
The emotion that ran through this match, particularly with Kingston and Mox, is one of those intangibles that we as wrestling fans love to see. And when you factor in Ishii, Takeshita, and everyone else that was involved in the match, how could you not love what went down in this one? Kudos to you, Tony Khan. That was a belter as well. And finally, Dave Meltzer wanted to know more about CM Punk's now infamous One Bill Phil line, and poked TK to find out how the locker room may or may not have reacted.
Okay, hey, how are you doing, Tony? On the first Collision show Friday night, CM Punk made the reference to the term One Bill Phil. And of course, you know, watching that, I'm going like, we've all heard the rumors and everything like that. I guess the best way to say, is there smoke to that fire now that it was sort of referenced on television? Or would you just kind of say it was a figure of speech?
Well, it was a throwback in many ways to the wrestling I grew up on. And I remember being a teenage kid in high school and watching wrestling on TNT, watching a two-hour wrestling show every week on TNT, and seeing a huge wrestling star of the time come out and reference Ted Turner on TNT. And I thought it was pretty cool to turn forward the clock to the present day and have a big wrestling star of the moment on TV referencing Mr. Zaslav, and especially given the way this show came to be, given that it was in the 90s where Ted Turner said, I want to give a slot on Monday night on TNT to pro wrestling, and here we are in 2023, and Mr. Zaslav, he runs the Turner Networks, and also he runs a large percentage of entertainment, and he's the boss of Warner Brothers Discovery, movie studios, TV channels, and so many things. And it's amazing to see how far that Turner empire has come and what it's become from what we as wrestling fans knew as the empire of TBS, TNT, TCM, CNN, and those great channels. And now with wrestling on TNT on Saturday nights, this was Mr. Zaslav's idea. He was the one who said, give 2 hours, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, every Saturday night to AEW. And we created Collision. And it was, I thought, very fitting to see Phil give a shout out to Mr. Zaslav. And it's no secret that AEW, we're trying to grow our revenues, chasing that media bag. So I thought that was very cool and a nice nod to the growing business that is AEW, where we're doing now multi-million dollar live gates, sell out international shows, and got a video game launching, and we've already got nine-figure revenues, and we're growing and growing and pushing to hit that magic number that Phil referenced. So I think it was very cool and a nice nod to what a hot time it is in the wrestling business and how exciting it is for pro wrestling in the media space right now, because it feels like there's a lot of pro wrestling on TV. And for a fan, especially, well, for all fans, for I was about to say one specific age group of fans, but I'm not going to do that. Instead, I'll take it across all age groups, because I think it's whether you were there 20-something years ago and had all this wrestling on TV and knew what it was like to have wrestling almost every night on TV and be able to find it whenever you wanted, because it wasn't like that for a long time for a lot of us. And it feels like it is again now, where there's a lot of wrestling on TV, and that's because of the fans, because fans are supporting it and making wrestling good business again for the TV networks. So I thought it was very cool as we premiere a new show to reference that and what's happening in the world of media. And it was a great debut, and that was a big part of it. So I enjoyed it. Thanks, Dave.
In complete politician mode, TK dodged what Dave was throwing at him, but explaining how happy he was with the callback to Turner Times shows that Tony Khan sees Collision as being a strong alternate show to Dynamite, with CM Punk as his Saturday night superstar. So yeah, that was Tony Khan speaking before Forbidden Door, answering a lot of questions from proper wrestling journalists and people in the media, the thing that I can only aspire to be a part of. So while Tony is answering those questions and Sean Ross Sapp and Dave Meltzer are getting to tickle his balls a wee bit, I am on here with you guys looking to fill page 3 of this week's Daft Sheet. So, Lewis, I'll come to you first. What has been the most titillating piece of wrestling news that you think deserves to go on the page 3 this week?
I don't know. I wouldn't say there's been too much crazy gossip, but I've gone with Vince McMahon's fingerprints. It's slowly turning into grasps and claws at this creative again. It's not all of it. You can see that it's not all of it, but it comes to a point where you're watching an episode of SmackDown or Raw or something, and something ridiculous will happen, or something just completely and utterly shite will happen, and you'll go, well, you know exactly who booked that. You know exactly who chose that point there. And things like, obviously, Carmelo Hayes coming out on Raw is reminiscent of, obviously, he had a better show than Karrion Kross did when he came out, but it's a fact. And Walter, when it was the case at Survivor Series, things like that, it just bring out big, dominant superstars from NXT, and they either lose or they get embarrassed. And even though it was a good match for Carmelo Hayes, he's done well, he's put himself across this. I don't massively think that was a Triple H call. I think there would have been maybe a bit more shenanigans not giving him a clean loss, but just other parts of the shows, I think Triple H would want to give more time to the women's side of it, things like that, and I can only see it going back into the sort of routine of it, of Vince McMahon changing these shows like he is. Even if he changed it and had a wee bit of time, like, you know, well, he's done the Bloodline story, but changing these on the fly, whatever it is, a day, 2 days, 30 minutes, during the show, it's never going to give compelling TV. So I think, yeah, Vince McMahon sort of overpowering his son-in-law is my gossip for this week.
It was always the fear that once Vince was allowed back into the fold after the Endeavor sale and everything earlier this year, that it would he'd start getting his mucky paws into the storylines and whatnot. And the 6 or so months that Triple H was fully in charge with some of the best storytelling I mean, outside of the Bloodline, you know, they're always fairly decent on a regular basis. Other stuff going on in SmackDown was not too bad. But for all intents and purposes, since Vince has come back in, and, you know, things seem to be ebbing and flowing, peaking and troughing quite a bit. And then if you believe the reports that you read on Twitter and stuff about Nick Khan and Triple H being unhappy with stuff that's going on, with Vince changing things at the last minute again, it's never going to change till the cunt dies. Like, it's just, and I know
that's, can't help himself.
It's maybe harsh saying that, but it's just like, he just cannot let go. And I mean, fair enough, you know, he's for, you know, separating the art from the artist, however one you want to say it, his, the way that he's modelled modern professional wrestling over the last 30, 40 years, you can't knock it. You can't knock what he's done. But he's going out there and just spoiling so many careers and characters and trajectories and all that. It's just, it's quite sad to see, really.
Mm-hmm. I think I've said this before in chats and that. There was no chance in hell he was ever going to wander off and take up fishing or golfing day to day. He's been doing this job half his life. You know, he was never going to walk away from that. It was going to be impossible. It was always going to be a case. He was going to wait for all the Me Too stuff to die away, wait till the Endeavor deal is announced, and then slowly make his way back in. It was always on the cards, and you're always good for Triple H, because look at all that hard work he did first to get NXT off the ground, make it the success it's became. But then, you know, we've seen it with so many debuts. You mentioned the Lewis, Karrion Kross. I've lost count the amount of underwhelming NXT post NXT co-op debuts. There's been like the Viking Raiders was the infamous one. What was it? The Viking Experience. Was that whenever they were called the First Night in Raw or something? And
is that another thing you go to Jorvik? The Viking Experience, you know, on a school trip?
It's the VR storyline thing you get at the Jorvik Centre in York.
Aye.
Not as bad as he tried to call Gunther though. The start.
So. Aye, like it's like
even even how he's dropped the ball, the likes of Johnny Gargano, you know, coming up, which should have had all the momentum in the world. It was the poster boy for NXT, you know, he was the workhorse down there. And, you know, just absolutely wasting him.
Aye, Vince just takes one look at him, not a skin indie boy, not, don't want him. That's what happens. It's like, I mean, I'm going to contradict myself in a minute with my piece of gossip though, because it actually relates to what you've said, Lewis. It's the news about Carmelo Hayes and his call up. Apparently, you know, management are really, really high on him. Now, I don't know if that's Vince or Triple H. It's probably much more likely Triple H. Triple H is a clear fan. But he's also got the advantage of mainly coming through the WWE system. He only had a year or two in the Indies. Other than that, he has a pretty much a WWE product. He wrestles the WWE style. I haven't actually seen a lot of him. I think I saw the Bron Breakker match, and I saw one or two matches he had as the North American champion. But I know it's not. He's very WWE styled. He's, you know, he's not a flip guy. He's quite conservative without being boring. Kind of like, I guess, a Randy Orton. Again, he is the typical WWE wrestler, isn't he? He's in that kind of mold. And he's also really good in the mic. And he's got that look and style that they want in a star. And I think they've been looking for this ever since Name Redacted got himself buried. Name Redacted, I meant Velveteen Dream. Because he was...
there's so many of them. Like, you need to narrow it down a wee bit.
Aye. So I think they've been... Because Velveteen Dream declared big, big plans for him, and then the stupid prick that he was, he pissed it all away with his behaviour, etc. So I think they've seen Carmelo Hayes as the guy that's going to fill that void. I know you're saying, Lewis, that it's not the best debut, but look, losing to Finn Balor when Finn Balor is about to get a title shot just days before a pay-per-view, that's not the worst thing to ever happen. And Carmelo Hayes is one of these guys that's talented and capable enough to recover from that. He's still the NXT champion. I think he will remain so for the foreseeable future, I think.
No, definitely positives of him being on Raw. But he's good with a bad.
Yeah. I think he's a guy in the coming years we're going to see a lot of. I think I can see him maybe... I'm still waiting for them to do something big with Montez Ford. I still think he, further down the line, is going to be a heel. I think maybe Carmelo Hayes is going to be his kind of arch rival in the coming years. I can see those two doing a lot of good stuff together.
It'd be good foil for each other. I mean, like, I don't know. Like, I've not watched NXT since the Black and Gold days, so I don't really know too much about Carmelo Hayes or Blum Breaker or any of them. But was Carmelo Hayes featured quite prominently on the NXT episode the other week where Seth Rollins went down to fight Breaker? Was he featured in that?
I didn't watch it.
Because if Hayes has done something on that show, then that maybe makes sense to then bring the eyes from NXT on it all with him. But, I'll go back to, it's the wasting of NXT talent when they come up. It's been something that's gone on for quite a while. And aye. I think, the rumours last week as well that, they were going to bring Ciampa back to for an open challenge with Seth Rollins. But I get pulled like 20 minutes before the show went to air. And instead, they just had him do the thing with The Miz.
Has Ciampa done anything on the main roster?
No.
He's been there, since COVID there, isn't he? He's been in the main roster. I can't think of one significant match he's had. This guy was the most talked about heel in wrestling at one point. He had that bright, bright win with the NXT title. He had that all-timer feud with Gargano. You would have thought, they need to, strike with iron's hot with him. But no, nothing's happened.
He's one of those ones, like, I know that when he was in NXT, there was a lot of chat about how he didn't want to go to the main roster because he didn't want to be travelling all the time because I think he just had kids and stuff like that. So,
he's... And he didn't just have a neck injury as well.
Aye. But again, it's a waste of the talent. I think there's some guys in NXT, like, I'm really surprised Bron Breakker hasn't been pulled up yet. Like called up because he's a guy that I think is made for Raw or SmackDown.
Nah, he's a Vince guy.
Mm.
He's on route to the main roster 100%.
And do you think, Lewis? Do you think that Vince being back and having his dirty fingers everywhere? Do you think that is going to be the detriment to others in NXT? If them getting called up because obviously you've got your headline names in NXT, your Breakers, Carmelo Hayes. I was going to say Grayson Waller, but he's already been called up. But like the Chase U, even like Gallus, I'm surprised Gallus never get called up in that draft other week there. Do you think that Vince is probably going to stymie those guys from getting the call up, or do you think he's in a good position to be a good judge of what's going to work in these main shows?
I don't think he's a good judge of. Obviously, I'm not on booking the shows. I'm not the billionaire. If I knew what he knew, I probably would be. But I think even with saying Bron Breakker's a Vince guy, things like that, I think even if he came up and had Vince's paw prints all over him, he'd still somehow fuck him up.
Yeah, I mean, we always thought Keith Lee was going to be a Vince guy, and then 5 minutes later, his name was, what was it, Bearcat? Yeah, he had a cat and going, I'm going to call you Bearcat.
And then things like Pretty Deadly, they'll come up, they'll do their thing, they'll be gone after a couple of title shots, maybe a little title.
Because really it's tag team, so...
Exactly. Yeah. His new shiny toy will be up, whether that's Bron Breakker next, and then Ilya Dragunov after that, and then he'll come up 100% in Imperium as the foreign heel, because he is foreign. The stereotypes that Vince loves to have, he probably won't come up as sort of the wrestler that he has been on WXW, all the Germany shows where he's been the big face facing off against Walter, the home hero, the crowd hero, all that sort of thing. And then he's even worse with the women when they come up.
Aye.
He's terrible with the men, but when the women come up, Zoe Stark, whether that was a Triple H call, or what has she done? She's in the Money in the Bank match. She's going to be someone who is there to be the sixth competitor. It might bite my words if she wins, but I highly doubt that happening. If he was to bring up Cora Jade or whoever, you've just seen, obviously, the whatever they're being called now, obviously, Kaylee Ray and Isla Dawn, Alba Fire and Isla Dawn, they've come up, sat up, watched SmackDown because I was interested in that match. Pretty underwhelming match, lost their titles instantly. Where are they going to go from here? Completely out of the picture. You've got Raquel Rodriguez sitting ringside. You knew what was happening in that match straight away. It looks like a Vince call to me that match.
It's Rhea Ripley off you for if Vince is in full control, because she is the big, easily the best women's star right now. But Vince would just look at her as a China.
Yeah,
like he would want her to be like a kind of a sideshow piece kind of thing. His women have got to be long blonde hair, double D's, and a statuesque figure.
Aye,
no shock that that's his background.
You could easily see like the other way in Dominic being turned into some sort of Beth Phoenix and Santino type deal. Down the line with Vince there. But to move on from this section, Peach, I'm going to give it to you, Lewis. I mean, it's what we've mainly talked about. I know you mentioned Carmelo Hayes' debut there. There's been a big thing, but Vince being back involved and pissing every day off, I think, is the worthy winner on this occasion. And the headline we're going to go for with that one is the McMahon comes around, Psy in brackets, again. So that one's going to go in there for you, Lewis. Now, we're going to run into the TV pages now, the things that are wrestling-related but not necessarily wrestling. Nailed it. We're going to go for what to watch, basically, that's involved with wrestling somehow tenuously over the next week or so. So I'll come to you first on this one. Steve, what do you think is the best thing we should be looking out for to watch? Putting
on our
eyes.
It's not much I have got, but I saw a really nice interview that Chris Van Feely did. It's a hard one to pronounce. Chris Van Feely, if you don't know, a really good journalist that he made his way in the wrestling, but he's now huge. He now interviews big movie stars. He did one with Chris Hemsworth a few weeks ago. He also interviewed guys like Henry Cavill and he's insanely good looking as well. I look at him and go, you are way too good looking to be a wrestling fanboy.
That's what I mean. He's more successful than me.
he does some MMA guys as well. But anyway, it was a really nice interview. He's put up the full 25 minutes early night, I think we can all agree is maybe the most over guy in WWE right now, fan wise. He got that enormous pop on Raw last week where he dissed Logan Paul. He's getting the biggest pop whenever his entrance comes on. And it was just a really nice wholesome interview. And Van Vliet is just asking him, did you expect any of this? And he says, not one bit. And he also asks, like, when did you notice it was getting big, and he mentioned the SmackDown, I think it was, a few weeks before WrestleMania, where Drew and Sheamus were cutting a promo, and he came out, and he heard the pop he got. He thought, oh, wow, I wasn't expecting that. And then by the time he got to WrestleMania, he didn't even have a match, and yet we had people cheering his name. A large section of the crowd cheering his name. And that's, I mean, you know you're over when people are chanting your name when you're not even there. And, you know, he also talked about the possibility of Money in the Bank. Now, obviously, he didn't give it away because he can't. But, you know, is he the man that's going to win it? I don't know. I think we're all kind of expecting it to be Logan Paul. And I'd say, the purist in me doesn't want it to happen. But the businessman in me, the sensible side in me thinks, you know what, it's going to help things pop again in the mainstream. Logan Paul is one of these guys that's everywhere. Like, he's been in the news regarding the Prime drinks, him and KSI. He's had all these.
He even got invited in that submersible thing as well, didn't he?
Aye, yeah. Was he not Jonathan Ross recently or something? I'm sure. You know, pop him that.
I swear he
was on that.
Aye.
So, you know, he is an A-lister. And look, having him troll about with the Money Bank briefcase is only going to be good. It's only going to be good news for WWE. That's going to, you know, trend like fuck on Instagram and Twitter. That's the kind of stuff they want. So, you know what? They're probably no long after that, they'll put the belt on him. They'll think, fuck it, let's go all out in this one. Let's grab a hold as much dosh as we can here and just go all out. And you know what? If I'm a businessman, I'd do that as well. And if I had that opportunity, but
so what you're saying is Chris Van Vliet should have interviewed Logan Paul.
Probably. He'll probably get him next.
Oh, no doubt.
Aye.
But no, it's the clips that I've seen for the LA Knight interview, whether it's been Chris Van Vliet or Stephanie Chase or Alex McCarthy, you know, whatever he's been popping up, he has been money. He's, you know, he's full of sound bites. He's full of, you know, he's talked a lot about how Vince saw him as being too old at age 40.
Mm-hmm.
In one of the interviews, that's why it was Max Dupree as well. So, it's, you know, the regardless of whether this wins the TV pages section of the Daft Sheet, you know, seeking out any interview with him, I think, is worthwhile.
He's just a great media guy.
He is. He's top tier for that. Lewis, what do you think our listeners should be watching this week?
To be honest with you, mate, I feel like these are always the hardest pages because I've had to go with someone that I don't think is out yet. I'm not sure if it's out yet or it's just come out, but there's talks or it's out yet of a Kurt Angle documentary.
Really?
Not sure if it's out yet or not, but I think that's a pretty good person to have a documentary on. I'm not sure if it's going to be one of the WWE ones or one of the sort of A&E ones or whatever, but he's had a long career of ups and downs and even further downs, bottom of the barrel stuff. And if it's a WWE one, it'll skip from about 2003 or 2005 to 2020. But he's been a lot of places, he's seen a lot of things, he's had a lot of demons as well. So I think whether that comes out sooner, whenever it is, it definitely worth a watch, because he's basically turned his life around, and I suppose it would be a good watch as well in terms of it would be quite upsetting throughout the bad parts of his life, but he's one of those few stories in wrestling where he's managed to turn his life around and done better things with it now. So that's one to watch.
We're being too morbid, you know. When you saw the struggles that he was having with the painkiller addiction and all his injuries and his DUIs and stuff like that totting up, you know, I had the fear that he was, you know, that he wouldn't be making it to 2023. You know, he just had that kind of air about him. He was one of the last of the Attitude Era guys that, you know, had all these demons, had all these struggles. I think maybe Jeff Hardy's probably the only one that I'm surprised has outlived him so far. And again, I know that that's the only fucking morbid way of thinking, but when you see the likes of, you know, Benoit, Eddie going, and other guys test, you know, all guys from that era that haven't made it, you know, past, you know, 45, 50 year old, to see the Kurt Angle still there through everything that he's been through, and the fact that, you know, he's found redemption in his life, he's found a reason for sticking about, and he's done what he can to amend it. I think it'll be a fascinating documentary to see, you know, just, you know, everything that he's gone through, how low he's been.
What's that going to be on, Lewis?
I couldn't tell you, to be fair. I was searching for some, because I'm a wee bit like Gredo. Sometimes I just like going back and watching
documentaries.
So I searched the other day. I was documentaries coming this year, and if you think about it, there's a lot going. To be fair, actually, I don't know whether
it's a Kurt Angle documentary to premiere on Peacock in summer 2023, according to Post Wrestling.
So it is a WWE thing.
Try to see if there's much in this
it's
year.
Peacock, and that's what WWE Network's on, isn't it?
It's on Peacock. It looks like it will be a WWE backed thing from what I can see on there. So
I've heard sometimes though they do let the wrestlers get a bit of control on it if it's something about their life. I know they let Flair do that. I think they gave him creative control, so I'm hoping they might have done the same with Angle if they give him a bit of license to also talk about stuff that happened in an Impact, or, you know, like the breakup of Karen, like the infamous Jarrett affair and all that, maybe, you know, because obviously Jeff Jarrett's in WWE's bad books again, so they'll be happy to get him buried again. So I'm hoping maybe they'll let a bit of license, give a bit of license to kind of talk about stuff away from WWE and the personal stuff he's had, because he's got an important story to tell. Let's not forget, he was the guy that, I would argue, probably along with Ken Shamrock, he's the bridge between MMA and wrestling. Because he is the guy he is the guy that, after winning the Olympic gold, you probably would expect him to become an MMA fighter after it. I know UFC wasn't in the mainstream yet, but it was starting to kind of get that exposure. Yeah. So he could have maybe went to UFC, probably would have been a UFC champion, but no, he decided to come to WWE, and it was after his debut that WWE started doing a wee bit of the reality stuff, talked about like guys that had MMA and collegiate wrestler backgrounds and that. So he kind of broke that kind of mold.
He's definitely a figure to be revered and respected in the wrestling world, and hopefully this documentary does him justice. So if you are able to find that, then look it up. But I think in terms of this week's what to watch, this week's TV pages, I'm going to go with you, Steve, and go with the LA Knight stuff. So well done on getting that pick in.
Thank fuck, I'm not now, a full jobber this week.
I've already lost one, so I was going to be the first one to lose it.
Hey, these are all winners in my eyes. Now, we're going to end this week. We're going to bring back a fan favourite. I think it's a fan favourite. I mean, folk listened to it and didn't shit in it, so I'm assuming it's a fan favourite. We're going to bring back the horoscope section of the Daft Sheet, and I've decided on it. I'm going to call it Mystic Mega Powers, because I think I was struggling for the name for that last time.
So it's episode 5, so it's the Mega Powers Explode.
Mega Powers Explode. There we go. There's the synergy with it. So Lewis and Stephen, I have sent you both a list of wrestlers who are the star sign Cancer. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read out 3 horoscopes from various publications today. I don't think any of them are the same like last time. So what I want you guys to do is I want you to pick one of your guys for each of the horoscopes I'm going to read out. So Lewis, you have got, I think you've actually got the pick of the bunch here. You've got Bret the Hitman Hart, Brock Lesnar, Heath Slater and Shawn Michaels. And Steve, you have Layla, Matt Stryker, Alicia Fox and Cody Rhodes. So
fucking hell,
Steve, if you can give me your first pick there out of your happy-go-lucky bunch.
Give me them again. So
So you've got Layla, Matt Stryker, Alicia Fox, and Cody Rhodes.
Well, it's got to be Cody. He's the only one that's like a main event caliber guy.
Well, so Cody is going up against who are you picking, Lewis?
Shawn Michaels.
Shawn Michaels. Oh. So it's Cody against Shawn Michaels. And basically what you guys need to do is you need to, we're going to see which of those wrestlers the horoscope relates to the best. So we're going to go for the Super Sort of Way Sun there. Star sign for Cancer today is you can adopt a different approach to close relationships. Now Planet Mercury helps you see that regular discussions about cash can be a crucial factor in success. Confidence flows from knowing that you can manage your own finances and frees up extra time for romance and fun. So would we say that that's more Cody or more Shawn Michaels? I would say Cody. I think it's Cody's there. Especially, you know, talking about the cash side of things and the confidence that flows from knowing that you can manage your own finances. He famously said, spend money now and earn more later. So that's what I would be thinking.
And Sean had that storyline where he pissed his money away in the wrong investments around the time, was it about 2009?
Was that when he was working in the canteen?
Aye, but it led to the Undertaker feud.
Yes.
Aye.
What about you, Lewis? If you get any, who would you say? Would you say this would be Sean's fight to win, or is it more Cody?
Go read it one more time.
What's that?
Go read it one more time.
So you can adopt a different approach to close relationships now that Mercury helps you see that regular discussions about cash can be a crucial factor in love success.
Is Joey Mercury still in WWE?
I don't know if he is or if he isn't.
He could be talking to Mercury.
Didn't Sean train him as well?
Sean might have trained him, eh?
I'd say Cody fits the bill. The only cash Shawn Michaels is getting towards is his pension, so I'd probably say
I'll be counting all that merch money for his weight belts as well. So that'll go. We'll give that one to you, Steve. You win that round. So give me your next wrestler, please, Lewis.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be shite at this, so I'm just going to choose Heath Slater.
Heath Slater, cool. And yourself, Steve?
I'll say Matt Stryker.
Oh, so we've got a commentator against a guy that's got kids. Right. So the Daily Mail says today, Mercury, the planet of communication, is entering your sign. For a long time now, you've been swimming against the tide. Your plans have been so plagued by setbacks, you've given up on some of your ambitions. They've been relegated to the back burner of your mind. It's time to bring them forward and give them some energy. A portal of possibility is now open. Don't delay. So is that more suited to Matt Stryker or Heath Slater here, do you think?
Definitely Stryker.
I think the communication straight away, him as a commentator, he's been on the back burner for the last however long. Where did he? Did he commentate? Is it in Mexico or something now?
Doing MLW.
Yeah, or is it
he was doing Impact last time I checked. It was him and D'Lo Brown.
Impact.
Oh, that was about a year or so ago. What about Matt Stryker now? Where's he? What's he doing? Matt Stryker, American professional wrestler. He's looking good for 49. He's looking good for 49-year-old. He is currently the co-host of Better's Eye on the Major League Baseball Network. Fair enough.
Okay, no.
So again, still in the planet of communication is still ripe for them. So that's one each, I think. That's one each.
Stryker, I got it. I think that's 2-0, is it?
Who hit Stryker?
Aye, Stryker.
Aye,
right, 2-0 to Steve. Right. See if you can get the clean sweep here, Steve. Who are you picking for this next one? You've got Layla or Alicia Fox left.
Oh, it's got Alicia Fox. Alicia Fox.
Alicia Fox. Yeah. And yourself, Lewis, you've got Brock and you've got Brett.
But we've missed a trick here. Should have done Brett against Sean.
should have done.
I think that it's a lot of these star sign things are about finding love and peace and this and that, and I highlight out any of that relates to Brock Lesnar. To be fair, it doesn't really relate to
Hulk himself.
I'll bite the bullet. I'll go with Brock and see what
Magic
happens.
So we've got Brock against Fox. Right. So according to the Daily Record star signs today, you get a strong feeling a youngster in the family is about to get themselves into a bit of a bother. You can't ignore your intuition, even though they say they're doing fine. You sense they will need some help soon, and you will be prepared for this, even if they aren't expecting it from you.
It's 100% Brett.
Got to be Brett. Brett and Owen. You know, I know that they say that you can make star signs fit whatever you want them to fit, but that couldn't be more Hart family angst related if they tried.
Is there any more Hart family members that could become wrestlers, though? Is Natalya the last one?
I think so, aye. Unless
Brett's kids, like, maybe.
Does Teddy count?
Is he not still in jail? Fuck.
Well, he's probably fathered about 90 wins.
Oh, that's true.
So, you know, the odds would say that one of him's maybe going to be a success.
Davy Boy's kid, he's a Hart as well.
Yes. Harry as well, aye. Awesome. Well, that's that one definitely goes to the Hitman there. So was that 2-1 that finished then?
No,
I pulled one back.
2-1 to Steve. Awesome. Right, well, I think that's as good a place as any to turn the pages over on the Daft Sheet. Thanks for being my guest this week, Steve and Lewis. I'm going to recap the headlines that we hit. So the front page was Forbidden Door Can't Be Knocked. The back page was Osprey Omega, Oh My God. Page 3, The McMahon Comes Around, Sigh Again. The TV pages went to the Chris Van Vliet interview with LA Knight. And as we just heard there on the horoscope side of things, Stephen Roche wins 2-1 with his mystic powers. So this has been this week's edition of the Daft Sheet. If you enjoy listening to us, let us know on Twitter. We get very, very few comments on the socials, which obviously means it's going well because people only go on Twitter and Facebook when they're being miserable bastards. Thanks for listening. And if you do have any feedback, anything like that, let us have it. Fucking come at us. We can take it. We're hard enough for that. If you haven't already done so, sign up to the Wrestling Daft Discord, where you can come in and chat with guys like us on there. I don't know what the tiers are costing these days, but you can have a certain level of championship on there. Go to Wrestling Daft Spreadshop if you want a t-shirt, whatever else it is that John says. Sign up to the Patreon. You know, there might be some other stuff that we can do that we can convince John to chuck on there as well, whether it's full interviews from the snippets that we chuck on there. And Steve, Lewis, however you enjoy your wrestling this week, make sure that it's daft and make sure it is sheety. Cheers.
11.